Blog Talk Radio.
Hi all, and welcome to Cosmic Voice. A slightly different start this time. We're just trying to locate Drake. But welcome on this Wednesday evening for another evening with Tanath, Sunfire, and Drake. First off, the ongoing Tolek saga. Now, from my point of view, I can see what some of you are saying, that you want answers, and we feel that we've given plenty of answers according to when it was possible. Sometimes it's just better not to give certain answers. Now, Sunfire and Tanath and Drake are all great friends with Tolek and have been for a considerable period of time. And Tolek has been approached this year to come on our show, and he refused. He said he was not doing any further interviews, and yet he gave one last week. So that tells you where we're at with Tolek. So people saying, well, we should sort out the differences and get him on the show. We have asked numerous times. We've had Tanath and Sunfire have both tried to contact Tolek to sort out any sort of disagreements, and they've been not received. So we can do no more. We can only put out the information that we feel is true to us. What Tolek puts out is his responsibility, and he does not speak on behalf of the Galactic Federation of Planets. We've stated that. The girls, as I've said, think an awful lot of Tolek. And I'm going to say something now, because I thought we should have mentioned about Tolek earlier. But the girls decided, and that's their choice, they didn't want to throw Tolek under the bus because they love him dearly. Now, who's to say who's right and who's wrong? Sometimes it's best not to be right and just do the right thing. They thought they did the right thing by holding on to certain information that was damaging to Tolek and the movement in general. And we can't argue with that. So eventually it had to come out and was released, which Tanath did on the Friday show with Robert Stanley. And she mentioned about the timelines. Well, to me that should have been sufficient, but then you get a raft of more questions and more divisions and people wanting to make a mountain out of a molehill. You know, we disagree. Everybody disagrees in life, you know, and we just shouldn't make a drama out of everything. We had the same with Universal Voice. You know, there was certain disagreements that could have been dealt with better, but it got broadcast all over the Facebook. And I said so when I was admin there. You know, would you like your life broadcast all over the Facebook? Because I personally wouldn't. You know, and it affected Denise badly, and she decided she'd had enough. You know, Denise is very ill. She's currently suffering with pneumonia. And yet people are still bothering her with numerous emails. You know, you're not being fair to her. Denise is not part of this group. She's closed down Universal Voice, and she needs time to herself to recuperate. So I ask members to please stop emailing Denise, because you're not being fair to her. You know, then we have the issue of freedom of speech. But with freedom of speech comes responsibility. And when people are putting basic lies to cause more drama on the Facebook, that's not cancelling freedom of speech. That's just what it is. It's lies, and we don't need it at this point in time or in the future. I know you all say you want answers. We want answers. I want answers. Drake wants answers. So does Tanath and Sunfire. We all want answers. You know, and we give as many answers as is possible. So, you know, I don't think continuing with the Tolek diatribe, which is what it's become, and the issue over Comet Ison should be continued. I don't want to be doing this every show. You know, there's lots of other things going on in Syria, you know, and positive things like Michelle Forrest is involved in with the grand juries. Go and get involved with your militia, you know, contact your Congress and play merry hell with them rather than focusing on Tolek and Comet Ison. Time will show who was right. And, you know, just let's wait and see. You know, Tolek has retracted the brown dwarf. Now he's saying it's a biosphere. Well, we said it wasn't arriving here, period. You know, so hopefully we can see an end to this and we can have more posts on the Facebook to do with more important things going forward rather than spinning out this Tolek stuff forever. Because it's, you know, it's counterproductive and it's not helping the group. So I'll hope you'll all support me in that. You know, we live 3D lives as well. You know, we've all got our own issues. Tanath had to move house and had to change jobs. Drake hasn't been well for a fair period of time. You know, and he lost his father. I've lost family members. You know, and Dad is unfortunately incapacitated with Alzheimer's. I also ended a marriage in the last month, but we still carry on free of charge and with the hope of moving forward, and hopefully we will all move forward and all reach our goals. And on that note, I'm going to play a song. I'll be back shortly.
Cause I'm missing you, I'm still alright to smile. Girl, I think about you every day now. Was a time when I wasn't sure, but you set my mind at ease. There is no doubt you're in my heart now. Said woman, take it slow, it'll work itself out fine. All we need is just a little patience. Said sugar, make it slow, and we'll come together fine. All we need is just a little patience. But I can't speed up the time. you know, love, there's one more thing to consider. Said woman, take it slow, things will be just fine. You and I've just used a little patience. Said sugar, take the time, cause the light's shining bright. You and I've got what it takes to make it. We won't fake it. Oh, I'll never break it, cause I can't take it.
Hi all, and welcome to Cosmic Voice. I'm going to introduce Tanath, Sunfire, and Drake to you. Hi.
Hey.
Do you want to go first, Tanath? Hi, Drake.
Yes, I do. I actually do want to talk, and I know that you want to let the Tolik thing drop, but I think a few things need to be said right now, and after this, I would prefer to leave the subject to drop.
Yeah.
I first started talking to Tolik back around the turn of 2012. Back then, he was a vivid, very, very bright person who had a great deal of personality and a great deal of energy to him. He's somebody I consider to be a friend, somebody I consider to be a colleague. Since about the turn of this last year, I have noticed a change in him, a significant one. I have noticed that he's become more and more short with people, which I can understand given repetitive questions. Everybody does that, including myself. But I have also noticed that he doesn't seem to be able to handle unscripted events as well as he used to. Additionally, he has said things which he has then retracted with no explanation. For instance, in this conscious life, I first learned about the Galactic Federation of Planets and that phraseology from Tolik. It is present in some of his older interviews. He mentions the Galactic Federation of Planets. He mentions the fact that it is founded by Tau Ceteans with the home planet Zeta, X-E-T-A, and is headed by Pa'al, a Tau Cetean. I don't know why he's chosen to retract that now, although I have my theories and I have my suspicions and I have my personal belief, and I will get to that in a bit. In this time, he's become more and more reclusive. He's become, even when speaking to me in private, more scripted and not able to address the actual question or situation that I bring to him. Instead, he makes mention of it and then starts talking about something completely different. I've had several instances where I've tried to compare intelligence with him and gotten something that was completely different from even known stuff that had been corroborated by other third parties. For instance, when a colleague of mine was being attacked, he started stating that it was reptilians doing this. We know for a fact that it was not reptilians who were performing the attacks at this time. We have already found and stopped the attacks by going after the correct party. In another situation concerning somebody else, he started giving a completely nonsensical explanation, followed by a discussion about the Procyons, who are completely not related to the situation at all. It was extremely confusing. He told me something in confidence right around New Year's. In confidence, I will not repeat what he told me, but I will say at this time it raised some serious, serious alarm bells. Since then, I've been watching what he said, and I've been watching his behavior, and those alarm bells have turned into sirens. Something is not right. I am very, very worried for the well-being of my friend, because I don't believe that the person who's speaking with his mouth is that same person anymore. There's been too much of a personality shift. There has been too much information that has been changed without explanation. I don't know what's happened with him for sure. I can't confirm 100% what happened, but for whatever reason, I no longer trust the person who calls himself Pollock, and I no longer trust the information that is supposedly coming from the Andromeda Council. And I'm sorry if this upsets people. I'm sorry if you think that I should somehow be an echo chamber for somebody else. I have to go by my gut, I have to go by my conscience, and I have to go by my own feelings in this. And I don't feel comfortable promoting Tolik's material anymore. I'm sorry. That's just the way of it. If you want proof that he's changed his story, well, try to go get that historical interviews before something gets changed and moved around. But you'll see, if you remember looking at it last year, you'll remember mention of Zeta. You'll remember mention of the Galactic Federation of Planets. You'll remember mention of Pa'al. I don't know why. Well, I have my suspicions why he would change that information now. I have my suspicions what's going on, but I don't have 100% confirmed fact that I'm willing to relate to people. At this point, to everyone out there, it must seem like the world's biggest he said, she said. Like Pa'al said, use your discernment. And like Thomas said, remember that we're people. You might be able to look at the Galactic Federation of Light material and see that they're very polished and they're very pat and presented and an image without emotions or variation. Well, that's because they're fakes. How do you know we're real? Well, we react. We have emotions. We have thoughts. We have identities and a sense of self. Some people have been trying to accuse us of going on an ego trip because Sunfire is an ambassador. It is not an ego trip to acknowledge that somebody is an ambassador or to acknowledge who does or does not have authority to speak for a given organization. Ego does not mean complete lack of self. It does not mean lack of identity or personality or emotionality or anything like that. To be without ego does not mean ceasing to be a human being. We are still human beings with thoughts, opinions, emotions, belief, passions, ideas, wishes, dreams, hopes, all of those things. Don't forget this. We don't place ourselves above anyone else because no one is superior. We are all people.
You're all equal.
We might have experiences that you have not yet shared. We might have some knowledge that some others are regaining at different rates. But that does not make us better than you. It does not put us above you. And it does not mean that we are perfect, nor does it mean that we should try to present ourselves as perfect, nor does it mean that you should expect us to be perfect. Expect us to be people, because we're people, just like everybody else on this planet, or off of it. And now I've said my piece, and hopefully made my peace. And until I receive confirmation that I can personally trust that what I suspect is not the case in terms of Tolik, I am not willing to talk about the subject any further. It's hard enough for me to worry about my friend.
Thanks for that, Tess.
I just wanted to say, you know, in regards to all those people that are saying, well, why don't we get together with Tolik and the Andromeda Council? We've made multiple attempts, especially over the past few weeks, to make contact with him, and he has refused and ignored any attempts at contact. I checked with my people upstairs at the Galactic Federation of Planets. I even checked directly with my commander. They have also made multiple attempts to make contact with the people of the Andromeda Council, and there has been a lack of response, even with us expressing our concerns over the safety and health and well-being of Tolik here on the planet. They know where we stand with that. We've, you know, made multiple attempts to contact them, offer any help, support that we can, and they know that we will do all we can to assist, but so far they've ignored and refused to return any attempts at contact. In the meantime, while the ball is in their court, we're going to continue to fulfill our commitments to the liberation of the planet and her population. We are not going anywhere. We will continue to do our work. We are here for the population and for the planet and no one else.
Like I've said before, if the radio is not exactly my job, it's something I do to help others. My job is freeing this planet, and that's what I'm going to do. Preferably with the rest of you guys helping free yourselves and this planet as well, because I sure can't do it alone.
Also, I noticed that there's somebody that was wanting us to address Tolik mentioning the Procyons in relation to the reptilian mothership. I spoke personally directly to Kyla, who is the head of Procyon Intelligence, and he said those are definitely not Procyon ships. He, you know, even doubled and confirmed our intel and sensor scans that they're reptilian and or Orion Empire ships. They're not Procyon.
Wasn't that done by reconnaissance as well?
Yeah.
Right.
We're not basing our opinions on any terrestrially produced videos or scans, guys. We went out and we had a look. And we didn't like what we found.
Well, hopefully it'll go the same way as Comet Elenin.
Likely.
That's the accident as well.
It definitely will not be entering Earth space or causing or posing any threat to
If it passes by, it's going to be an empty rock.
Yeah. If. Very pretty light show at best. Yeah.
Hi, Drake. Have
you
got
nice, guys? It's got go nice to be able to sit back and listen to all this.
I tell you, this hasn't been nice. This hasn't been nice or pleasant or anything like that. I'm very worried about my friend.
I was actually introduced to Tanakh by Tolik, and I cannot thank him enough for introducing me to one of my most best and closest and beloved friends that I've ever had in my entire life down here on the planet. I love Tanakh very much. She is like a sister to me, and so, you know, I give my thanks to Tolik for introducing me to her. And I myself am very concerned about Tolik. I can still consider him a friend and a brother, and I miss, you know, the fun little chats that we used to have last year before he changed or whatever happened. And, you know, I'm looking forward to going back to that, going back to the little, you know, friendly chats and you know, learning from his wisdom. And also, I know the Galactic Federation of Planets is also extremely concerned about Tolik. We're also extremely concerned about the fact that the Andromeda Council itself is ignoring all attempts at contact, and they have been for a while, apparently, from what I was told. So with that said, unless Drake wants to add, let's get into the questions.
Okay, thanks for that.
There is actually something I want to add,
go ahead.
And that is a little bit about the difference between how we handle the protection and communication with our incarnates. Every group does this differently. In the case of Sunfire and myself, we have our own people projecting here 24/7. We get to know them well enough, and it's usually the same few individuals. But we get to know them well enough in terms of their personality and their energy feel that can't be faked. We have a high degree of security on ourselves and each other. The Andromeda Council did things differently. They did not have such a 24/7 on-the-ground spirit-projected contact or watch over. I'm extremely confident that the people I'm talking to now are the same people that I've been talking to over the last 2 years. I don't know if other people are always going to be able to make the same claims. Tolik did things differently. He may have said that they're the same people that he's talking to, but we don't know if it's even the same Tolik.
Okay. All right. First question. Has Terra ever been at a higher dimension than 3D in the past? And
yes,
the second
question.
Right, okay. What were Terrans like before we were manipulated?
Terrans were a lot like other extraterrestrial societies, human positives. They were very friendly. It was an open society. Communication and interaction was generally friendly and without a lot of problems. You wouldn't see a lot of things like divorce and things like that because love tends to be a lot more intense in higher dimensions, and it also tends to be a lot more steadfast. And when you're telepaths, it's a lot easier to fully understand somebody and not make an error in judgment due to being too young and just not knowing enough like I did in my early 20s here. Sunfire,
okay.
Do you have anything to add to that?
Go ahead.
Because I know you know a fair bit about Earth's early history.
Yeah, I do.
Do you want to talk about
quite well.
about the strands of the DNA? Did we have the full?
Yeah, originally we had 12 strands of DNA. During the things that occur, the events that occurred after the fall of Atlantis, this was genetically engineered to two strands. There was the method that they used actually affected everything on this planet. And oddly enough, we even have evidence from reptilians who've been living on the surface for a long period of time that shows that their own genetic code, the strands have decayed. The longer they spend on this planet, the more that decay happens. We've since located the agent responsible, and we're working to neutralize that. But yes, we started out with 12, and now we have two on this planet.
Question for Drake. There was a post on Gene Haynes' site regarding missiles shot down by a UFO, namely the Palladians in Iran. Can you comment on this? And second, are the Palladians good or bad?
You're gonna get a variation on this. Everybody would like to think because certain rogue elements of wannabes as bad guys presenting things incorrectly that the Palladians are all good guys. That is not the case. Now, secondly, getting into the ideology that things have to be shot down, we have a tendency in terms of technical operation to either convert said atomic weapons and or make them disappear and or other nice, wonderful things. One of the things that's done commonly is to cause the firing mechanisms in terms of, you know, you get to shoot the rocket when you push the fire button. Yeah, everything works fine. Push the fire button, nothing happens. Now, you want to confuse a technician, all things are go. Everything is fine. This don't work. Now, that is some of the operational procedures used. Very rarely will you find a case where somebody shoots, comes up shooting something off, like a rocket or ICBM or whatever you want to call it, and then it's attended to. Generally, I'd say average, we have a tendency, and I say we as inclusive, to know ahead of time what's going on. So, therefore, when they make these little decisions to, hey, let's blow up the world, or some other cutesy little thing they come up with, we have a tendency to know about it well enough ahead of time in order to attend to it before an incident takes place. Now, this is not to say that the cabal, and these are the bad guys, these are earthlings right here among us, well, mostly earthlings, right here among us that do not have our best interests in mind. They will stage anything, and I mean that literally, they will sacrifice anybody in order to promote their, quote, agendas. These agendas are designed for varying things, primarily to become our rulers. And everything has been done and is being done that is possible to prevent that sort of stuff from taking place or becoming any kind of reality. So I would say that the idea that one of the ETs shot down ICBMs is probably a bogus. Now, you have to also secondarily, in all this, understand that there has been some reverse engineering, and there are military components who do have operable stellar-type craft. It don't mean they can go anywhere much, and it doesn't mean that they understand them fully, but some of these do contain weapon systems that are, to some extent, functional, although generally extremely old. When you fire an antique musket at something, it don't do the same kind of damage as a brand-new 50 caliber does today. Different deal. Same caliber, different weapon. What you have to understand is, though, the idea of the action, and, ooh, we got pictures of ETs in their cute little saucers flying around. I'm going to suggest that most of this is a pony show, and the horse is out of the barn because it's BS.
Next.
Right. Question to anyone. Any comment on the concept of samadhi in Buddhism? I heard that it could manifest gigantic amounts of energy. Is it possible to utilize such power to assist the positive ETs or resist against the negative entities? Samadhi.
Oh, I'll have to refresh my Sanskrit there. Ah, yes, transcendental meditation. Yes, that is definitely something with utility. That is definitely something you can use both for your own benefit and to benefit other people and humanity at large and the earth. Samadhi, the practice, any meditative practice, whether it utilizes practices from one region of the planet or one cultural group or religious belief or another, as long as you're putting the energy and the intent into it, it will be beneficial. Yes, you can raise amazing amounts of energy using such practices. And if you know what you're doing, which if you practice this, you will learn eventually, some quicker than others, you can, with your intent, direct that energy to specific things. And yes, it does tend to have a more powerful effect when done on behalf of others. If you, for instance, try to samadhi yourself the lottery, it's probably not going to work. If you try to samadhi, for instance, better weather for a place, yes, you may be able to alter the weather. Yes, you may be able to help crops, remove disease, help people heal, and all of those things that we were told long ago that we would be able to do. Right now,
so,
it's difficult to do in the third dimension, but the practice, the better you get. And trust me, putting your 3D training wheels on now is going to make your life easier in the 4D when you actually start having these things pop up a lot quicker and a lot more obviously than we're used to.
So basically what you're saying, it works better when it's service to others rather than service to self.
Yep, you can get some results with service to self, but usually there's enough competing interests that it's difficult to sort of net that. However, if you do it service to others, it tends to have a highly amplified effect. And I think this is one of the universe's ways of balancing things, because service to self can do a lot of damage to a lot of people really, really quickly. But service to others can counteract that. It doesn't take a lot of rotten apples to spoil a bunch. So the universe has a built-in mechanism that outweighs the spoilage.
Okay. It has been stated in past shows that it's likely to take 4 to 10 years to move from a money-based economy to a non-money-based economy. If inhabitants of Earth are able to either manifest or replicate materials, then why would anyone need money at all?
Likely it would be a matter of understanding and redefining what value is. For instance, is it effort? Is it time? What constitutes reward? What constitutes fair compensation? What do we need that we can't necessarily magic into existence on our own? That other people can maybe do this? What are they willing to take as fair value in return for their efforts? Working this out is going to be a process. It's not going to be an instantaneous thing. And it's going to be something that people on this planet are going to have to decide for themselves what it's worth. For instance, do we still want to place value on gold? I mean, yeah, it's pretty and it's got a lot of industrial uses, but in terms of having value beyond that, the only value beyond that is what has been socially decided by societies and cultures, not by actual facts that exist on their own. There's a word I'm looking for, and I can't find it.
Okay. If birds are leaving their physical bodies behind here to go ahead preceding us, are humans going to do the same? I thought it was dead.
No, because this will happen at the same time. It'll happen for humans at the same time it happens for everything else on the Earth. Not all of the insect, fish, animal, and other deaths, plant deaths that have occurred are cases of these beings transitioning. Some of them are. Most of those are actually disappearances as opposed to deaths, as in a beehive just, all the bees in a hive just vanish. No corpses, no sign of them, poof, gone. Mysterious drops in numbers of this and that. It's happening. Things are out there. But at the same time, we also have quite a bit of damaging things that are being done to the planet and that the life on this planet is starting to show signs of. Just like you can take some poisons, chronic poisons, for years and years and years and think you're okay, and then all of a sudden you start getting really sick. That's what's happening with a lot of life on this planet.
Okay. Tanath, you said that wheat was a bad cabal-type program. Is rice the same?
Well, they're trying to make changes to rice to do the same thing that they did to wheat and the same thing that they did to corn. With corn, it was more exact. They had actual genetic manipulation techniques where they could go in and make changes deliberately. With wheat, it was kind of, it was the golden age of chemicals, and they were doing what they could to just randomly start changes. Yes, they're trying to do it with rice. They're trying to do it with pretty much every major staple food. Look at also what's being done to animals that we eat. The feedlot system, the factory farming system, not only is this horrifically cruel to animals, and I do mean absolutely horrifically, inhumanely cruel, but it puts an incredible amount of stress on the land, and it creates animals that are sickly and not healthy to consume. And furthermore, it is not necessary to feed us. We can have the same standard of life we have now without having to resort to the feedlot system. It's done deliberately. It's done to hurt the earth. It's done to torture animals. It's done to hurt us. And it's done to create a pretext so that some people who eat this go to ideological war against some people who eat that in order to make each other out to be terrible people or whatnot.
Okay.
You know, the really best thing you can do, and we fully realize not everybody has access to this, but it's a matter of going to the next best. If you don't have access to the best, go to the next best. Grow it yourself. Get it from people you trust. Get it from vendors you trust. Try to get it from people who do the actual work, not a factory, not a farm, a factory farm. Get it from actual farmers. And yes, they've done everything they could to kill the small family farm, and that is to leave us no choice but to eat that which has been commercially produced, full of poison, meant to kill us, meant to kill the planet, and meant to cause torture in everything it touches. Another thing I want to alert people to, organic does not necessarily mean humanely raised. It means they used poop to fertilize and something else to kill bugs. They still use commercial harvesting machines. They still use monocultures in the same soil year after year after year. They still use all conventional farming practices. It's just that the substances they use to fertilize and control pests are different. If you can find somebody who's running an organic farm that's doing things old-fashioned or trying land-friendly methods, then it's a real bonus. Try to go with them if you can. If you can't, Don't feel guilty about what you have to do to keep yourself and your family fed. Just pick the next best solution that's within your grasp.
Greg, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I totally agree. One of the there are several aspects to things. If you'll note what nature does and watch how things naturally come about, this can be plants, animals, whatever, you'll find that there is a balance in terms of several things. One is the number of whatever it is. You do not necessarily have an overabundance of corn crops everywhere. You have a mixing of small groups. Same thing is true of animals. Grazing animals require a certain amount of feed, and when the capacity of the land is reached, then you have what's called balancing. This is a die-off. Some of them starve. Some of them do not have the good health necessary because they could not get quite enough of what they needed to eat to survive the winter. This is how nature, in terms of its balance, is set to maintain that balance. The idea of changing from a production orientation to more of a natural orientation is beginning slowly to take place. And it's a slow process. But the idea of free-range, grass-fed beef, the idea of the same thing with chickens and pigs and other critters that we have decided to use for foodstuffs have been becoming more obvious to certain producers in that. The grain-fed in the cattle pens in the breed lots
makes them sick too.
Well, hold on. It does not produce what they're after. What they want to do is be able to fatten up their product so that it has more weight and thus being sold by weight garners more cash for them. What they found is several things. First of all, domestic cattle are not the best breed or breeds to be used for a foodstuff. Our Native American bison is much superior, survives a lot of adverse conditions much better, and refuses to be penned in. So you're going to have free range. You put a fence up, it'll tear it down if it can, etc. The idea of the difference when it's stated do the best you can is to look for free range in all animals that are used for, like chicken, pork, beef, things of this nature, that are used in our food. Now, the difference is this. The natural selective process of fattening up at the right time of the year, at the right time of maturity, happens at a greater rate on the free range than it does in the cattle pens. Even if they use certain drugs to shoot them up with and make them all of a sudden gain weight. The health of the critters is like 100% better. And here's the neat part. Most people who raise domestic critters for slaughter like to see a reproductive process that is hard to keep up with. In free range, if done correctly, you'll never stop producing. And these people who are sensitive to minor changes in these kinds of things are finally coming to the realization that maybe Mother Nature and the things that were might be a little better than what they have in mind. You'll find that a lot of the large ag companies are now beginning to do several things. One of those, and this is specifically found, as I said, in meats, is to use the free-range process. They're buying land in order to do this. The secondary part, and this is really a mind-blower, the idea that you can rerun the same crops over and over and over in fields obviously depletes the nutrients for that particular crop on like the second, maybe third time around. What they're finding is that now if you rotate certain things and use what's called a dead drop fertilization process where you do not till the soil, your yields generally are up to 20-30% higher than those who do it the old-fashioned, till the soil, do this, do that, routines. These things are beginning to be discovered because the farmers that use the tilling, the farmers that use the feedlot, the people who find the intense expenses involved in those are finding that the expense is mitigated extremely. I'm talking half, maybe less. In some cases, as low as 20% of the cost of doing things that have been done standardly. You have to understand that tilling the soil is an interesting idea. You turn it up and supposedly aerate it. Well, that's all well and good, except that on average, soil doesn't run more than 1 or 2 inches deep in terms of fertile soil. Secondly to that, when you turn things and mix things up, you kill earthworms and bacteria that are beneficial to the plants. The idea of having a really great lawn might require that you allow a few of those wonderful weeds that everybody loves so much, called the dandelion, to come up. Plants have root systems, and those are in layers. The last layer is the permeating root system. It puts out into the soil the parts of the nutrients sucked up that it doesn't need. Guess what the grass just loves? Exactly those nutrients that the dandelion is squirting back out because it don't like them. So the idea of balance, that's first. Number two, natural. This means that chickens didn't have coops and fences, and you didn't have things like feedlots for cows and chickens and pigs.
And those eggs were orange inside.
Yeah.
And
also, the
eggs from chickens that are free range don't catch things like salmonella. They don't pick up diseases that are communicable to man. In 90% of the cases now, not just a couple, 90%. So you start looking, when you start looking into these things, you start understanding that, nature does have a better idea. Now, how do you get somebody who is oriented to large farming to do so? Well, there's two problems with that. One, we bring in way too much food from other countries. We should not, and I'll say this very clearly, not under any circumstances be in a position to have to do that for any reason. There is plenty of room, there's plenty of land, and there's plenty of small farmers who would happily grow small crops. And under a communal basis, and, you know, people have heard of a commune, well, they call them co-ops. And a true co-op, you have maybe one tractor that serves 3 to 5 farmers. One tractor. So you split that, and you start splitting the expenses down, then your expenses are a whole lot less. Yeah, you got to buy the fuel for whatever land you're covering. That's normal. But what I'm saying is that these kinds of cooperations, not just among people, but also among us and nature, then we begin to fit into nature. Now, the practice of fitting into nature is called husbandry. It has been practiced for millions of years on this planet by varying groups of people. Each of the peoples who practiced that were head and shoulders above everybody else in production. Now, think about Egypt. Think about the Pharaoh. Think about the biblical story. All of a sudden, things turn around, even under the same drought conditions, and the land produced. The reason it did was that it was not reliant upon things that we would consider vital. In other words, you don't absolutely have to have rainfall. If you have the proper foliage, it creates a terrarium effect, and you can look up what a terrarium is. It's an enclosed environment, and you don't lose the water. It evaporates, condensates on the globe, and falls back in. The same thing happens on the leaves of the trees in deep forest. You notice how it's always really nice and cool? That's the evaporation. That is the exchange of earth temperature for what the atmosphere would have it produce. So you have extraordinary things that we can do, and very easily, and be more productive, be considerate of not only ourselves, but also nature in whole. And when we would do these things, then we would get to the point where the self-sustainability, and they love that word sustainability, oh, they eat that up, the green culture, whoopity-doo. You really want to see this? Forget the BS that you are getting from the government and start looking at what is outside of the box in terms of organics, free range, in conjunction with Mother Nature, and that's a pamphlet that I've seen online, working with the gods was a real funny. I saw that, and that was in an organic thing, and I said, now, wait a minute. So I took a quick look. Well, you got the one god that makes rain, you got another one that makes wind, you got another one that makes storms, you got, you know, and it went through all these things. You'll find, and this is really, really interesting, that the storms do not form over areas that are natural nearly as often, and they're not nearly as prolific or violent. When you have a normal natural forest, when you have normal plains, very different environment. So you want to take climate change and turn it all upside down? There you go, and that's my speech.
Okay, thanks for that, Drake.
I just wanted to add one more little thing real quick. I was going to say that I remember Visayas, one of the Zenitae that Alex Collier talks to. He said that with seeds, if you magnetize them and then always facing the south, that you get an increased crop yield.
I also heard that if you put them inside a pyramid, apparently the Russians are doing that, and it's creating like bumper crops if you enclose it in a pyramid. Okay, has anyone of the panel got an opinion on Saint Germain I Am discourses? Is the information given valid, or is it an old time theory? And the second part is, are there really any ascended masters?
The first one I can't answer. When I hear Saint Germain in channeled material, the first thing that comes to mind is the Galactic Federation of Light, and I don't trust that at all. I can't say anything about the trust because I don't know anything about trusts. I'm going to go with Neil Keenan because my people vouch for him, and I trust my people. As for the Ascended Masters, the term Ascended Masters was invented by the Galactic Federation of Light, planted very early on in the, I guess you could call it the collective consciousness or pop culture or even New Age culture, and painted out to portray a very specific sort of being. Kind of like, oh yeah, Ascended Masters, we're your Ascended Masters. Yeah, yeah, you know, like Jesus and Buddha and all those guys. No, no, we don't really mean slave masters, we mean teachers. No, take out the Ascended part and you get masters. You get people calling themselves your masters and who talk down to you, who treat you as though you are an inferior being, not just a younger being, an inferior being who doesn't know your butt from a hole in the ground. And they present themselves in, as I've mentioned before, a highly polished image that has, it's been completely scrubbed of personality, individuality, emotionality. It goes back to scripts. It goes back to, it falls back on authority. And it presents itself as its basis for authority, ancient scriptures, which we have absolutely no third party, you know, absolutely no reasonable expectation that these things have been unaltered. So when this guy comes up saying, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm your ascended master, I was Buddha, all you have is his word for it. And the fact that he's a polished, slick magazine Buddha that doesn't have any personality or emotions. Well, if there's one thing that anyone will have learned listening to us, it is that we have personalities, we have emotions, we have bad days, we don't use a script, we're real people. None of these ascended masters are real people. They are carefully produced magazine slick images of people that are supposed to somehow convince you to do whatever it is they want you to do. I don't trust it. Anybody who won't laugh, I don't trust. Anyone who won't crack a joke, I don't trust. Anyone who doesn't shed a tear when something awful happens, I don't trust.
Fair enough. And we're at the top of the hour. We've got a couple of songs. One, a request from above, and another one, a request from the Facebook page. We'll be back in about 8-9 minutes. See you later. Hi all, and welcome back to the second hour of Cosmic Voice with Tanath, Sunfire, and Drake. Are we all back?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Right, on with the questions. To Sunfire, do positive ETs respond to a contact request with a meteorite-like light?
They can. They can, you know, they can do light shows where it looks very similar to a meteor, yeah. But you should be able to tell in the behavior of the light whether it's a meteor or not.
Okay. Question for Sunfire and Tanath. If you have full-time jobs here on 3D, are you only active in 4D during your dreams?
No, I'm active 22/7. I do need 2 hours a night to actually get sleep. But no, at work I tend to put it on hold and just pray that no disasters happen that require my attention right now.
Very difficult multitasking.
Yes, it is. And somehow, I don't know, call it providence, call it whatever you want, but somehow anything that's needed immediate response has happened on break.
I cannot count the times that the office said, oh, I need to run to the grocery store, or I need to go do this, or I need to go do that. And I mean, literally, you could almost time it within 10 minutes before walking out the door, like if you had any concept before walking out the door, all hell would break loose. We'd get an invasion, or we'd get, you know, attempts, or we'd get, you know, some other crisis that just erupts. And I'm like on the phone texting Tanath, and I'm like, oh my God, help, help. It never fails. But, you know, it's become quite, I want to say, quite humorous at this point that we just end up laughing about it afterwards.
Good.
But they seem to have really, I mean,
yeah, but anything that really matters, I seem to make it to.
Yeah.
Right. Is the landing or landings to meet the people of Earth still on schedule for this coming October?
We do not know if it's going to be happening in October. We don't have a time frame. We don't give time frames.
Based on current situations, I would say I would love October, but it would be really optimistic. Also, I don't know what... I don't know. Sorry, I've got somebody here who's helping me with some supper. I'm getting gravy. It's delicious gravy. But yeah, I don't know what the situation is going to be with that, quite frankly, at this point.
Right.
I just trust that it's going to work out all right. Because, you know, we've got good people on the job, and, well, I happen to believe the universe looks out for us.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm confident that everything will work out in the timing that it's supposed to. I don't know what the timing is, but I have a feeling it'll work itself out.
Yes. This person has been seeing the number 333 everywhere for a while now and has gotten more frequent this year. What does this number mean? It's a bit like the people seeing
1111 or 1212. Yeah. Numbers, we generally take numbers to mean, it's kind of like the universe saying, hey, pay attention. You know, it's your very own Navi. Look at me. Hey, listen. Hey, listen. Anybody who's played Zelda knows exactly what I'm talking about. So, yeah, numbers, we take that to be sort of the universe doing its very own, hey, listen to you, either to tell you that you're on the right track, there's something you've got to pay attention to, or there's something else that's significant. There's a lot of time where you'll see numbers and they won't have any relevance to you. It's just a number. Other times where it'll feel like it hits you right in the square in the solar plexus. Boof. Hey, listen.
Yes.
Remember,
must admit,
I was going to say, I remember Alex Collier talking in one of his lectures where he said in his manifesting things, what he would do is he would meditate. And while he was meditating, he would set certain numbers assigned to certain things. And when he started seeing those numbers pop up in his everyday life, that he would know that it was part of what he manifested during his meditation. And so, you know, it's sort of another method or approach to the whole situation.
Right. Can any of you elaborate on the Space Fence Surveillance System deactivation on October the 1st and its upcoming impact on North America?
Great.
Let me well, I just think this is all comical myself. you're going to have some impact anytime they do something of that nature is done. You have to remember what is its intent and purpose. Okay, that's first. It's like the 333. When you have whole digits separated by an open space, that means you can stick any kind of operator, such as a times or plus sign, in there, and you can end up with whatever answer you might want. So, you know, it's this is going to be one of those tentative wait and sees, and that's your best outlook on it, okay?
Is this the Star Wars stuff, Drake?
It's a part of that sort of idea, yes, but it's you have to remember a couple of things. Do we have the technology capable of implementing things like you saw in Star Wars? No. Do we have some ideas that lead in that direction? Yes, and this is pretty obvious that this is one of them. You have to understand that when an outside entity that is capable of global sciences looks at our planet, what do they see in the way of global sciences? And what is the, what's our number? Global science would be something that would influence, say, the overall planetary weather. Movement of our planet, the condition in terms of temperature, et cetera, of the planet, its general condition in terms of centrifugal force equaling spin, rate of spin, whether it's slowing down, speeding up, or if our planet is either expanding or contracting. These are just simple, and I mean very simple, examples. Right now we've got a goose egg. As far as mankind goes, we refuse to work together any better than cats and dogs and a lot of brothers and sisters at certain ages. And consequently, our idea and application of planetary sciences is a goose egg. Now, if that outside entity, knowing what planetary sciences are, decided to be generous, we have one planetary science. And it's kind of iffy because of its usage. And it's called the Internet. So, you know, how do we rate? We're not near Star Wars. We're not near Star Trek. We're not.
Yeah, what I meant, no. Drake, was the Star Wars program that Reagan was promising 20, 30 years ago.
Yes, I know. And they had a plan laid out, and they had a whole bunch of things that were supposed to happen, and they could not get them to go. You flip the switch, and it burns out. That sort of problem. And that's fundamental. You want to take it the extra step further, you then have influences outside of our area in terms of mankind called extraterrestrials that do not have our best interest in mind that, well, here you go, man, I got something that's really cool. Check this gadget out. And when you go and use the thing, it's more detrimental to man than anything, any positive aspect it could have.
Case in point, jump rooms.
Yeah.
Well, jump room tech that was released to the black programs was flawed. It was flawed in such a way that it would continually degrade anyone who used it.
Exactly, and there's a whole bunch of sick people that are running around that used to that are now high level black ops or Q as they call it. I don't particularly appreciate that, but at any rate, the ideology is that mankind can take something they discover, turn it full blast, and not have repercussions. Well, there's serious, and I mean very serious problems with that. Nuclear weapons are the result of not understanding the direct relationship in different types of energies and the conversion thereof directly into electricity. Whoops. Our nuclear program in terms of generation of electricity uses one half of the scale. When you turn it in, put full both of the aspects of using that energy correctly, you come out with totally harmless waste products, not the ones that make mountains glow in the dark like we have now. That's one example of our stupidity in our applications. We think we know, so therefore we go. And they're screwing with the weather. Now, I will suggest that a lot of the weather that we have problems with is caused by people screwing with things they do not understand fully. And you're going to continually have this. Now, some of the stuff that happened with the Star Wars thing actually got extraordinarily serious. They were having people go poof and disappear. And that was not exactly what they had in mind. And they could not get around it. They tried a whole bunch of different things and couldn't figure out what they was doing wrong. So, you've got advancements, and you're going to have pieces and parts of the puzzle slowly coming together. But you're talking another 20 to 50 years at the rate of development we presently have. So I would not personally be overtly concerned that they're going to try to suddenly create a Death Star and say, you're on a no-fly, zap, you know. They do some of that now, don't be mistaken. And yet, even so, we can't build a craft that can travel interstellarly at a reasonable rate of travel so that you don't lose generations of the people manning the craft. Hello.
Or get that nasty time dilation effect going on.
You will.
Who wants to go away from their sweetie, you know, age 24, come back age 25 when your sweetie's 80, no thanks.
Well, the fun part is deals with an old movie called Dune, and it stipulates that there was a thing called Spike, and this is some kind of a squirrely compound. And what it allowed an individual to do with their mind was to bend time-space, meaning that if you used to travel somewhere and you had a picture in your mind of that place and you implemented the travel protocols, and yes, there are certain manners that you do follow if you don't want to go off somewhere else. The interesting part about this is that this is capable, presently, don't need spice or any of this other happy stuff, you can do so now. Problem is that this aspect, this capability, has been lost for ages, eons. The reason it has been lost is because man decided that he had a better idea, meaning that he could outthink the creation and the creator. This is why you have people trying to explain away principle can't be done, because the principle is rooted and grounded in the foundation of existence. So you cannot change unless you change existence, you can't change the principle. Very simple. In terms of the idea of the true travel, where you bend the space-time continuum to suit your desired outcome, at the point that you get a clear picture in your mind of where you're going, you're there. Doesn't matter what the distance is. This is true of ships you might be on. This is true of planets, the whole nine yards. There's a lot of people who would like to learn how to do that, and it's not as difficult as some might think, but there are protocols that have to be followed. The individual has to prepare themselves specifically and absolutely correctly for that travel. If they do not, it's going to work funny. So, you know, it's like having a radio that won't tune in a radio station but makes a lot of funny noises. This is basically where we are at in terms of the Star Wars thing. You get some of the little parts and pieces. Eventually, as I said, 50 years from now, maybe they might get it together, but I doubt it. I think we're going to advance in a different manner, much more quickly than they've got in mind. That's my answer.
Okay. What will time be like in the new 3D world? Will it be the same as here?
Well, the new 3D world, I think it'll probably be similar. I'm not too sure about that, but I know in the 4D world, it will be very, very subjective.
Technology with the new 3D world, from what I'm being told, it is going to be a lot more greener, clear, pure air. You know, it's not going to have all the toxins.
But what about time? Or did I hear that question wrong?
No, it was about time.
Oh, time.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's a time becomes a quanta and is fully manipulable at a certain point in our development.
I mean, yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, whoever all goes to the 3D world is going to have to collectively decide on a method of, you know, telling time that will work for them.
Right. Will there be ego in the new 3D world, or will spirituality lead the way?
Well, this really goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of the show, and what is ego? What is ego? What do we define as ego? Apparently, a lot of people define ego as having an opinion, independent thought, or asserting yourself in any way. That's not an ego. That is an identity. That is a thinking mind. Sorry, that's you're really going to have to define what you mean by ego. Do you mean, will people still be able to be free thinking? Will they still have differences of opinion? Yes. Will some of them sometimes get occasionally full of themselves? Yes. Will a lot of them be humble? Yes. It really depends. It depends on the individual. People don't stop becoming individuals. People don't stop being people. But you're not going to see the kind of rampant abuses of power that we associate with the term ego. That doesn't happen. Not in positive societies. In negative societies, yeah, it rules the course. But in positive societies, you don't see that kind of rampant self-centeredness or abuse of power or position that we normally associate with ego.
Yes. Tanath, you mentioned that a child born in 4D would still be a toddler in his teens. Would my teenage son revert to being a toddler after the transition?
No, your teenage son would act like a teenage son. Maybe a little more thoughtful, maybe a little more aware of what can happen, but still curious, and still eager to learn, and still goofy, and still teen. The people who go to the fourth dimension are going to go to the fourth dimension at the same sort of mental development that we associate with their current age, and the same sort of physical development, with the exception that the infirmities caused by age will not be present. Like I said, if you're over the age of 30, you'll look like an idealized 30-year-old version of yourself, firing on all cylinders.
And I think also it'll depend a lot with those that are incarnates or indigos or rainbows or crystals or, you know, whatever, you know, term you want to use. The incarnate will, from what I understand, revert to their normal, their pre-incarnation form.
Okay. further to add, how many years does it take for a child to grow to his adult size? And will I have decades of pushing a child around in a stroller who was born in 4D?
Stroller, no. They learn how to putz around pretty quick. they become at least ambulatory very rapidly. The growth chart is not linearly corresponding to what we currently see. They'll spend more time as a small child than they do now, and more time, you know, growing up. But the helpless infant stage does not last very long at all. So you won't be pushing around a 100-year-old baby. Don't need to worry about that. The age at which species reach maturity depends on a variety of factors, including the species, the dimension of the species, and the estimated lifespan of that species. I think in the case of Terran humans, that most of us in the 4D are going to be considered self-sufficient adults, usually right around the 200-year-old mark, somewhere between 150 and 200. You're going to see toddlers from about a year on to about maybe 15 years old, and after that they start becoming small children, and then, well, what we currently associate with teenagers, you might be seeing that in the 1100, 1200, 110, 112, or 120, 130, that sort of age range up to about 150, which would be roughly correspondent with your average 19-year-old. I hear giggling.
I was just going to say, usually in around the 1200 to 1600 years is where people, you know, which would be the equivalent of about 30 to 35 or even like late 20s to mid 30s, around about in there.
Yeah, for Talcedians, I think, I'm not too sure what Terran lifespan is going to be like. Most fourth dimensionals run lifespans of about 5,000 to 10,000 years.
Right. Some up to 15,000.
And, you know, some people really, really like childhood and all of that so much that they'll slow down their own development in order to get more out of it. So there's an individual factor as well.
Yeah. Right.
The developmental processes are similar in terms of the ratio to age. In other words, what we spend in terms of the time now will be similar in terms of lifetime that we would spend in different dimensions, generally. That's a real nice general statement, but it fits. Okay?
Yep.
It's not quite linear. Some things have moved around, but yeah. The general, like if you say the ratio of time that you spend being not yet an adult is roughly proportional.
Okay. If we have a mate and we are separated by either of them being out there or incarnated somewhere else, are there rules about them contacting us before transition? I say this in reference to a short story that Drake put out around 6 months ago.
I don't know if there's rules. I don't know who would legislate these. I do know that there's ethics. I know that there are a lot of people who have mates out there who are already in committed and loving relationships on this planet. And in respect for those individuals and those their choice, most of those beings are waiting until those people who are in this situation recover their own memories of it. I know of at least one circumstance in which the being in question did not realize that there was another relationship. And once that being realized, basically said, I'm going to back off and let you make up your own mind once you can remember.
Another good example is like Knopf and I, our fiancés are dimensional and we're down here in the 3D as incarnate. You know, so there's a bunch of different ones out there.
And yes, I do have a significant other in the physical world down here, and that significant other is also a Silver Legionnaire and well aware of and a participant in that relationship up there too.
For me, I'm completely fully committed to my fiance up in dimension.
Good. All right, next question. Since we all create our own universe and each of our universes are different and there are infinite parallel universes, is it possible that we will experience the shift at different times?
Well, that is one of those, commensurately agreed upon things. It's agreed upon by multiple different individuals, groups. Everybody has agreed that is going to be a commensural experience. So yeah, you can experience it at a different time, but you might not be sharing the same universe as others. So if you want to share it with other people, then you want to share it with people who are having the same experience.
Right. From what I understand, after the transition, people will lose their memories because if we remember what previously limited us, like how we couldn't manifest anything physically, for example, then we wouldn't be able to do it in 4D. Is this correct?
We're not going to be losing any memories. More accurately, we're going to be gaining a lot of memories of our past lives and who we are as spirit beings, not losing any.
Think of it this way. You're going to be upgrading from a 32-megabyte drive to a terabyte drive.
Yeah.
Good. Can a replicator in 4D be used to replicate another replicator?
Yeah, replicators can replicate other replicators.
Yes, you can have a never-ending loop of replicator. That's the great thing about replicators, you know. As long as somebody is around who knows how to make them, you will never, ever run out.
And there's a bunch of different types of replicators, too. There's not just replicators that make food and clothes. There's replicators that make ships. There's replicators that make houses. There's replicators that make buildings.
If you've got a good instruction manual kicking around, you can take a portable survival model replicator and use it to replicate parts to build a bigger replicator, and use it to replicate parts to build a bigger replicator, and so on and so on and so on, until you got one that can churn out buildings.
There you go. Right, question, how far across species can relationships occur? I am a cat lover, and I find the idea of a feline ET partner very attractive, especially if they look like the Thundercats characters. Do you think they would look like us humans?
Yeah, there's a lot of felinoids like the Thundercats characters, and you know what? If there's one thing I've learned in the Silver Legion, it's that love don't discriminate.
Right, yeah. You know, and as far as that,
interesting crossbreed.
As far as feelings go, I believe I mentioned on a previous episode that the Talcedians are descendants of the original humanoids that came into this galaxy. They're descendants, which is why you have the big, wide-set eyes and the pointed ears and the sharp teeth that look very cat-like versus very Karen. You know, there's a good majority of the I know there's a good majority of other races out there that are humans and have pointed ears and are, you know, can trace their genetic heritage back to the felinoids. And I did ask...
Gunfire.
Yeah.
Is that where the Tau Cetian tendency to form giant cuddle piles comes from?
I can imagine so, most likely. That's probably where it comes from. We do love our cuddling and snuggling, and especially on really, really soft surfaces. All of our beds, our couches, carpeting, it's all very deep pile and very soft and comfortable.
Sounds
that would
good.
Probably explain it. I was going to say, I know somebody asked before and we didn't have the answer at the time, but we do now. I found out most Tau Cetians can't purr anymore, but there are still some that can. And from what I understand, the ones that can are the ones that still have the highest concentration of the old genetics, not, you know, the newer lines, but the older genetics. And my fiance is one of the ones that can still purr.
Hank can't.
Huh?
Hank can't. He says, oh, no, I definitely can't purr, but my brother can. Both of
I know. I know our. I know the head of the division that we're a part of can purr, and so can Pal.
Okay. This next person said, please forgive my ignorance, but for the benefit, she's a new listener, for the benefit of us that don't know, can the ladies briefly tell me who they are and who they represent?
I'm Tanaf. I'm the prime commander of the Silver Legion, a.k.a. the one who gets her butt kicked whenever a bad decision is made. I am also a dragon incarnate, and have been in my last interstellar life. I was a Tau Cetian.
One badass pilot too.
Apparently, I was pretty good. Yeah.
You are amazing. Don't say
you know. I don't remember so much about the amazing part, so much as the oh crap, oh crap, oh crap, I'm getting shot at. Oh crap, oh. And that was kind of it. But apparently I counted pretty well for myself.
Knopf is one of the most legendary pilots in the Galactic Federation of Planets to ever exist.
Cool.
No, that can't be right.
Yeah.
2 billion years of history there. That was 3,500 years ago.
Just accept the compliment, please, Knopf.
My name is Sunfire, and I am currently the ambassador for the Galactic Federation of Planets here on Terra. Also, I'm in the executive clearance and executive rank of the and in the General Defense Division for the Galactic Federation of Planets. So, I mean, you know, we go around and we kick reptoid butts and then turn them into boots. And we use the Hydra horns for decorations. It's fun.
And to give a brief outline of the Silver Legion, we are an interdimensional, multi-realm army, essentially. We are currently and plan to stay the special forces for the Galactic Federation of Planets.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, I have a seat on the council, as does Admiral Mander. Although my seat usually gets occupied by the other commanders because, well, I'm already splitting my work in several different directions just by being down here, so I can't put my full attention to that kind of thing.
And just to give a little bit on the Galactic Federation of planets. The Galactic Federation of Planets is a 2 billion plus year old organization, an interstellar organization that basically manages the interstellar trade and relations between its member planets, and also supports mutual defense of its member planets, and we're here as the lead organization in the liberation efforts of Terra and the population. We're happy to have the Silver Legion as one of our independent members. You know, they're awesome.
Okay.
And they're, the Galactic Federation of Planets is based in the Tau Ceti system. Lead planet is Zeta, as Knopf mentioned earlier. And so wanted to reiterate that. We do have a collective council. The head of the Galactic Federation Planets is, in fact, Pa'al, as was mentioned before. His name is spelled Pa'al.
And he was remarkably thrilled to observe a Terran convenience store, so much to the point that Hank joked about making him a shopping module for his personal holotech.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, well.
Well, you know, he doesn't get down to the surface of any planet hardly ever. So, you know, the fact that he got to have a moment to come down and experience being on the surface of Terra was, you know, quite an exciting adventure for him.
Yep, and his reaction was identical to the one I saw with my brothers and several of the other Tau Cetians who've come down here, which was stare around. There is stuff everywhere. Because when you have replicators, you don't need the same sort of logistical supply lines and big box stores that have formed up down here. My one brother, the one who is a replicator tech, we had a very long, involved discussion of exactly what the implications were in terms of logistics, land use, transportation, and storage of, well, not having replicators versus having replicators. And it was very insightful. You would be, you know, if you haven't actually spent time thinking about it, it's actually shocking when you think of the logistics involved in making sure that we have all those TVs at the Walmart and everything else there. It's incredible the amount of space and resources that goes into just having stuff. And I still can't find pants that fit.
Well, you know, that's one of the beauties of replicators, is you will be able to have clothes that always fit you perfectly.
Good. Right, next question. During the use of the soul traps, did the manipulation extend to lifetimes or experiences outside of 3D so that we could be sent back and reincarnated to any time or era?
I think there might have been some time travel involved in terms of it wasn't always consecutive or wasn't always linear, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understood that question correctly.
Yeah. If so, the next part, would the controllers of the soul traps have benefit at a higher level from our misery outside the concept of time?
I think time makes suffering more acute. When you live in a condition of subjective time, suffering goes by really quickly. You don't do it all that long. You don't like it, so you skip it. In a place where time is rigidly enforced, you don't have that luxury. Suffering becomes more acute. It becomes more drawn out. You get more from it if you're an evil bugger. And I think that might be part of the reason why we have such terrifyingly linear time.
Right. If when we die, we automatically go to 4D now, assuming there are no more soul traps, what's the difference between dying now before the transition and staying on for the transition?
Well, before the soul traps, what happened was you died, you went to 4D, you got stuck in a soul trap, which recycled you back into the 3D. If you die in the 3D now that there are no soul traps, you will be immediately given a choice. Go to 4D or go to Source. A lot of people are just choosing to go to Source, figure things out, try again. There's nothing wrong with that. You're welcome to do that. I think there's also going to be a lot of people who are going to wait, greet their relatives, tell them it's okay, and then make the decision to do whatever's next.
Well, I think that part answers, will we be able to go wherever we want in 4D? Can we just as easily choose another planet?
Yeah.
Yeah. You would have to go to Source first. So that's the caveat. If you want to go try something other than being a Terran, even a 4D Terran, you'll have to go to Source first to do it.
Well, because they can go from...
Unless you're reverting to something else that you were before you came here. Like,
right.
That's the only other...
I mean, they're talking about, like, traveling once they go to 4D.
If you're talking about traveling. Yeah, travel is open. You don't have to go to Source to travel. Yes, there will be space tourism.
Yeah, there is, for sure. I mean, you know, as far as I understand it, there are billions of planets, you know, even just in this galaxy alone that are open to travel, open to tourists. There are some planets that are restricted, you know, because of them being either a sanctuary planet or being a military planet that's just for that military organization. But generally speaking, the majority of them are open to tourists. And there are a lot of sanctuary planets even that are open to tourists, but they're a little more restricted for, you know, obvious reasons.
Okay. This next person stated, I received an email in my person inbox from Google Circle saying that Anne Kristen Granqvist promoted me as a moderator for the Silver Legion Google Circle group with a reference link to the website. The question is there an official Google Circle group for the Silver Legion?
No, there is not. The only online representation we have is this Blog Talk radio station, its associated Facebook page, and the Silver Legion website. Anything else, whether it's another Facebook group, whether it's a Google Plus group or Circle or whatever they call themselves, whether it's a Twitter feed, anything else is unsanctioned by us.
Well, with the exception of Tantarum, which is our YouTube.
Yes, and I've mentioned this on my blog. Tantarum is authorized to post our videos and text to speech representations of things that we've said and other things of that matter. He's the only authorized YouTube person, and he's mentioned on my blog with a link to his site. So if you want to go re-listen to past interviews instead of on the archive, you can go there. And another thing. Now that we're starting to get the transcripts completed, my website now has a page on it with transcripts that you can click on and download. They're in .doc format, which means that you'll need either Microsoft Office or an Open Office software. I use Apache Open Office because I don't have scads and scads of money to throw down Microsoft's gullet. You can download them there. The translations are still coming, but we are currently up to, let me see here, We're currently up to halfway through July in our transcripts.
Great. I have the two
and
more.
Thank you very much, Thomas, to help for you and the assistance of your partner in helping to organize all of that, because with this job, I simply don't have the time or the energy. And I really appreciate the effort of all the people who are doing transcription and translation. Thank you, guys. It's a huge help. We've
yes.
had a lot of people who have requested this, so that there are people out there who's willing to do this. It's really helpful. You have my very, very deep gratitude and appreciation.
Yes, we've got some of the shows in German and Czech, and I think Swedish coming up shortly, so that should be good for people of those languages. Next question. In your last show, you agreed that Enki is Lucifer. This was also what I found out by studying literature about the Anunnaki on the internet. Is then our so-called god, the demiurge that the Gnostics talk of, Anu, or is it Enlil?
Now I'm familiar with the concept of the demiurge. Now I only really know about the Enki Lucifer connection because, well, I know not being for a long, long time. Like I said, he got blamed for a lot of things that weren't his fault and continues to get blamed for a lot of things that weren't his fault and made out to be kind of a boogeyman. And he isn't. He's just kind of an idiot.
He's got an ego the size of the universe.
Yes, he's very full of himself.
A bit naive.
But, yes.
Yes, there's the word.
Interesting. It's a painful combination of traits.
But at the same time, we still love him all the same.
And no, that does not mean what some people are no doubt going to go running wild with. We are not Luciferians or anything like that.
No.
We happen to know the guy, and he's not worth worshipping. No being is. Though I will say that, you know, what you mean by God is hard to intuit from what you said, but the Gnostic concept of the demiurge is very applicable. In addition, you know, Drake can talk about the Old Testament and the New Testament and the Bible. Drake has actually studied his crap here, guys. He knows what he's talking about with this stuff. And he can tell you a lot about it.
You trying to make it me to get in this?
Yes, I am. You get in there. Jump on in.
Okay, well, two forms of light, one from the sun, one from the moon. And there's a statement, do not get burnt by the silvery light. That's ancient Celtic, by the way. And I would suggest that people take heed and think about, is this something I can get a sunburn? Well, a lot of people would say yes, and a lot of people would say no, and can you tell there's one even there? Normally, you won't get a sunburn from the moon or moonshine. However, Luciferian goes to a lot of things. One of those is those creatures in the waters that glow at night. This is a Luciferian quality. The ideal here is to change the meaning. And the meaning is inverse light. That's what reflected light is. And not necessarily good, bad, evil, ugly, or whatever, anywhere in between. This is where man gets his fun and games ideas. So when you look at this then in a biblical term, you'll find that Lucifer was the light bearer. Now, that means that you remember the old Testament kings having a little bearer chair where you got the four slaves and the little canopy and all this happy stuff and the fat dude sitting in the middle enjoying the ride? Well, in the idea of Atlas Shrugs, like that dude's looking at the cover, you got this one dude holding up the whole of the planet. In the same idea, you have Lucifer bearing the light, or creation, or the Almighty, however you'd like to look at that. And Source does not like that term, Almighty, but it's kind of fun to throw it in once in a while. So what you have is, how could a light bearer go to the point of being verbosely negative towards the light itself? Can't happen unless it's pure darkness. You cannot convert pure light to pure darkness. However, within the yin-yang signet, where you have the little scrolly thing and half black, half white, you have a balance. So, you have the above and below separation between creation and the light bearer, such as the same between man and the light bearer in many ways. We have yet to make that step so that we can understand and comprehend and perceive the ideology and understand the meanings of things that do not translate either in idea nor in simple logic, let alone physics. And so we're kind of dealing in a way with the unknown. Lucifer did not do most of the things that are credited, as has been stated. What happened was that people needed something, and these are specific people, needed something to hang all the ills of a man upon so that there was a whipping post you could tie somebody to. Consequently, Lucifer not only got volunteered, but elected and tied to the friggin' post. Being naive and unsophisticated in your actions does not make you guilty of the things stated in terms of the credit given directly to this entity. You'll find that innocence can also be looked at as being naive. When you're dealing with something that has an ulterior motive, a crafty nature, and some kind of agenda that they would like to see promulgated upon everyone. You'll find that many in the church originally that set this up were very much aware of these things and used them extremely. Whoever's munching that, quit it.
Sorry.
I hear you. But then I did it, too. Somebody said something about me opening a bag of chips and I crunched to one just to rub it in. So, you know, there is a little of the devil, so to speak.
Hello, Drake. It's enough. Let's play some music. Right, if we're still on air, I'm not too sure we are. We'll go into the music break and we'll see. Oh, you're back.
The light break. Say what?
You went missing for about 45 seconds.
Oh, great. Oh, boy. Which 45 seconds is the next question?
No doubt.
Basically, Lucifer is not what he's been made out to be. If you're going to bear the light of creation, you cannot be evil. Just that simple. So he got hung with it, tied to the whipping post and all that, and not according to true actions. I'll leave it at that.
Right, we're at the top of the hour. I'm going to play a couple of songs, 7 minutes roughly. And we'll be back with the final hour. Mm-hmm.
to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. This indecision's bugging me. If you don't want me, set me free. Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow?
Thank you.
Hi all, and welcome back to the final hour of the Tanath, Sunfire and Drake show. Are we all ready?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. Is it true that the biggest star or space gate on Earth is the one above the Near East region? Too sure on that one.
I don't know. I don't think there's one that's bigger than another. They're all roughly about the same size.
Yeah. Can any of you give a description of the term of angels and archangels? Are they good or are they bad?
The term archangel comes from archon, which means controller or ruler. I'll let you draw your own opinion on that one. Angels on their own depends on who they are. Some of them are good, some of them are not so good. Roughly they fall into three camps. The ones who basically want free will for themselves and others. The ones who want to be in control, and the ones who just want to stay out of the whole mess and do their own thing. Those are, that last one is the smallest group and rapidly dwindling because the second group tends to go out and enslave them, which usually makes them part of the first group as soon as they get a chance.
Yeah, or as soon as they get rescued and freed.
Right. Question for Tanath or Sunfire. We appear to have many reptoids in Congress and Secretary of State and more. When do you plan to remove them?
As soon as possible. But a lot of... Go ahead.
Yep.
As soon as possible.
Who were the original people, race, who got bamboozled by reptoids into Judaism?
Can you say that one again?
Who were the original people, race, who got bamboozled by the reptoids into Judaism?
Well, they started out as basically just another one of the many tribes of people running around in the post-fall of Atlantis world. What happened was one particular group was picked out by a reptoid overlord, and you know this happened with many other groups in the same region, picked out by reptoid overlords, who then proceeded to use them as proxy wars against each other. A lot of the Old Testament exploits that you read about, you know, go over here, kill this faction there, that was basically proxy wars for the reptoids. You know, it, on one hand, it had the effect of, you know, deciding which reptoid overlord was dominant for the region, and on the other hand, it had the effect of filling his coffers full of human meat and suffering.
Yes. Right. On introduction to Reiki, there's a ceremony and induction when you learn symbols to enhance either protections or more power to your intention. So my question is this positive teaching or a trick to co-create something negative without realizing it?
I'm not sure on that. I do know that it's not necessary to use symbols to do Reiki. I know plenty of people who do Reiki without symbols. Anyone can learn how to do Reiki.
Yeah, this is it says Reiki, R-A-K-E-I. I don't know whether it's something different or they misspelled it. I'm not too sure.
I don't know if I'm just saying it wrong. I've always heard it as Reiki.
Yeah.
And I am familiar with the fact that there are Reiki symbols, although I'm not familiar with the symbols themselves or their unspoken or spoken purposes. I would say if you feel comfortable using it, use it. If you don't feel comfortable using it, don't use it. You know, I use tarot cards, right? Like, I read tarot cards because I find they're an excellent focus. Symbols can be useful. They're not all bad. But make sure you understand what you're using.
Yeah, a lot of the languages up in space between the various races are symbols, or based on symbology. The universal symbol language is based on symbols and a bunch of different symbols. And there's symbols that are considered force symbols. Sacred geometry is all symbols, pretty much.
Okay. Are there any kinds of magic psionics whereby a warrior can combine with an animal and transform into a powerful singular form of entity and then split back into the original form after the battle?
I do know that some exist. I don't think they're native to this universe, though. we do have some in the Silver Legion who do that sort of combination entity. It does not seem to be common, but I have observed it. I do know some people who do that. I think that would require an extremely close bond between the two beings involved. I do know that Tau Ceteans have a form of mental link in which two beings can agree to come together in order to sort of focus their processing power, but they still have, you know, two different forms.
Right, yeah. That's
so that's more two people coming into one mind as opposed to two people coming into one body sort of thing.
Yeah, that's where the Vulcan mind meld came from.
Yep.
Vulcan neuropressure is a Calcidian massage technique.
Yeah, and it can be, we have techniques down here on Terra as well. A lot of chi, you could do some of the same things with chi or ki focusing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this question is about Mark Kimmel, a celestial known as Toth, I think I've pronounced that correctly, T-A-U-G-T-H, has clearly stated that it used Mark Kimmel as a channel. Are you able to pass comment on this?
I'm really not familiar with, I've seen his stuff in reference. I've seen it referenced on the Andromeda Council site, but I've never really felt particularly called to it. I didn't get the warning incoming bullcrap that I sometimes feel with certain materials, but I didn't feel particularly drawn to it either, so I really can't say. It could be that they're using the term channel for telepathy, which gets done a lot. For instance, Blossom Goodchild does it, you know. I do know that we've had third-party confirmation that the Athabantian exists. No, it's not a biosphere. It's a starship. About cruiser size, I think. And
yeah,
not
I think
currently.
Corvette.
Yeah, Corvette is what I think they called it, which is similar to a cruiser in size. And it's as far as the Silver Legion is concerned, it's not known to be an enemy.
Okay.
What I understand, it is one of our positive ships that's on our side, from what I understand anyway. And I'm not familiar with Mark Kimmel's material, but the couple of times that I've heard him in interviews, he's obviously a very genuine, pure of heart person as an individual. You know, so I don't know beyond that, but, I mean, I never got any negative vibes off of him in the couple of interviews that I've listened to that he's participated in.
Okay. You have mentioned that the Agarthans have been removed on Gaia's request. If the Galactic Federation has the ability to overrule the advanced Agarthan technology, why is it the Federation is limited now by the Cabal or the Reptilians?
Because the Agarthans were not 3D.
Yeah.
And they were also beneath the surface. Whenever the envelope is being produced by or with, it appears to persist from about 30,000 feet to about 100 feet below the surface.
And also, it's not just the Reptilians and the Cabal. There are
other players that don't seem to be mentioned at all. I mean, I've caught a couple of foreign language references to some of the additional players, but you know, there's groups out there that are involved in this that, you know, we only recently heard of, and it's like, okay, who the heck are these people? Well, apparently they are real. And you go and you look and you can sometimes see mention of them or recollection of them here and there. I mean, one thing I absolutely did not expect was that my years of playing Dungeons and Dragons would be useful in any way. But I had recently somebody describe something to me that I'm like, no way. No, you can't be talking about Illithids. No, I don't want to deal with Illithids. Yep, it was Illithids.
Oh my goodness, I remember them. I remember somebody was describing, we were dealing with a huge rash of abductions and all kinds of chaos, and we went and we found out they were these beings that looked exactly like the Squad.
Yeah,
it was just like, what the heck?
I had some real WTF moments where, you know, I'm used to things from fiction being real, but things from fiction being, you know, trying to abduct people or invade the planet, that was a little new to me.
Yeah. And, you know, and I remember, Knox, you were the one that actually got me through that, grasping the concept of all this stuff that is seen as fiction is actually real. And I want to thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
You've been a major help in so many ways that I cannot express.
Good.
And I love you very deeply for it.
Thanks. It still blows my mind at times, too. To the point where, you know, I get them to describe it again, and then describe it a third time, and then I go, oh my God, Illithids, I can't believe it.
Right. That question's been covered about Tanath, and the question about Galactic Federation of Planets and what kind of details you have was covered earlier in the show. Could Tanath give more details about the evacuation of the underground networks, where even the cities of Talos and Shambhala evacuated?
There's some subterranean cities that are actually closer to the surface that where there wasn't evacuations occurred, but the civilizations that we know of as Agarthans, they were basically evicted. Telos or Talos or however you say it was definitely evicted. And yes, that was an eviction. The evacuation part came when, you know, Mother Earth starts shaking rocks from the ceiling and we said, okay, we better get you a ship.
Yeah.
And they were not... am I right in saying that they were not positively oriented?
Well, some of them were. The problem was some of them had also been behaving very badly to the point where Terra Gaia herself basically said, okay, until this is over, basically everybody out of the pool. You know, we've got to clean the pool. Let's not, you know, somebody took a crap in the pool. Now we got to clean it, everybody out. she's made it clear that they'll be welcome back after Ascension once the dust is settled. But until then, because there were too many different groups that and politics going on that was jeopardizing her surface, she's basically said, out.
Yeah, and the only ones that will be allowed back on the planet are the ones that are going to be living and working in the best interest of Terra and the population.
Yep, and the whole population is mined.
Yeah. Anybody that doesn't have the best interest of Terra and the population in mind won't be permitted to come back.
Remember, she considers her rightful population to be those beings that are on her surface vibrating with her.
The final thing is more of a statement, which I don't think is correct, but is the plan for some humans to return to these underground cities as they are our natural home?
No, they're not your natural home unless you happen to be in a Garthan incarnate. In which case, you'll be able to return once everybody else goes back. But no, the plan is not for Terrans to go inhabit those cities. I mean, after transition, once those Agarthans who are willing to abide by Mother Earth's rules come back, they'll probably open it up to those who are interested in immigrating. But right now, no, they're kind of off limits.
Yeah.
There's been too much monkey business. We don't want that to continue. Gaia doesn't want that to continue. Or Maita, if you want to call her by the name that she's preferring now.
Okay. Are spaceships actually able to get close to the sun without being disintegrated? And how?
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, it's a gate.
Yeah, it's great. And there's video footage taken by NASA satellites. Thank you very much, NASA. Of the Tharstra biosphere within a very close proximity of the sun with a energetic line to the sun doing work on the star itself. They have what would be the equivalent of UV shielding that prevents any kind of disintegration and prevents the heat from being a problem.
Yeah, small craft don't do the journey very well. Most of the craft that go through the sun gate are the larger ships that are, well, they're designed for interstellar and instellar journeys.
Like planets that size and bigger, yeah.
Well, no, not even planet size. Like, generally above the, 300-meter mark or thereabouts.
Yeah, cruiser class, battle class, anything along that lines and higher.
Right. You ready, Drake?
Of course.
Can you explain what black holes are for and how they operate, please?
That sounds like a course in astrophysics to me. What they are? It is a natural process of inversion of all matter and energy. An inversion of that. And expulsion. Now, as you know, black holes only take stuff in, so therefore it compresses. The matter then is matter or extant strata that goes in, comes out in varying forms through as what has been described as a white hole. Area of discovery is going to be interesting. You have to have a very specialized craft and very specialized beings on board before you want to try to travel through one, but they are designed as a doorway primarily, as I understand creation. The
auspices and parameters and things that go with that are extraordinarily complicated. When I have, and I'll give you a real simple example, when I have four or five extremely complex things, complicated both physics and application-wise and in their physical forms, I use the word simplex. This describes one specific area of this. Within the parameters of a black hole, you have approximately as many simplexes as you have grains of sand upon planet Earth. Now,
no wonder you don't want to wander into one of those things.
Well,
Hey, Bright, did you ever read the thing that was put out by both Hawking and also mentioned by Alex Collier, where they saw a new color and sound frequency actually coming out of the black hole a couple years ago?
Yeah, that's a reverb effect. And I would be extraordinarily careful of anybody trying to capture those energies. That particular type of energemata is not something to be fooled with.
Right.
If somebody wants to understand energy, go and look up energemata. That's an English translation of a word that's very ancient. And it will lead you through a gamut of a combination of long articles, complicated mathematics, more complicated physics, and suppositions as to applications and resultants. You'll find, as I did, some 2,000 different publications on that particular subject. Of those that I have read, and I have not read them all, were the most principled, the most open, and the most correlatable ideologies. This means that there was some portion of each of the ideas that readily translated into someone else's totally different theory in some cases. This is where you get the simplex. When you take all of the things involved and combine them, you end up with the highest capable representation of shape in sacred geometry. Some people look at this as a certain type of sacred knot. Some people look at these things as the creation itself in terms of creational energies and form. And some people then take that and extrapolate it and really understand that it is the intellect that directed the energemata in the first place, creating it all, that is what they need to study. Now, given all this, and this is interesting, we have a thing called a multiverse. Within that complex, there are also other multiverse, meaning that it's not limited but unlimited. It is not finite but infinite.
We call it a multiverse cluster, and there's many of them.
Well, it's more so than that. And the reason I say this is that if anybody has done the mathematics in frequency multipliers or dividers in electronics, you'll find that it is, as is found in harmonics, you may find a harmonic that has extremely high numbers in terms of its correlation frequency, and yet the butterfly wing flapping on this side of the planet making the hurricane on the other is proven in these formula. This is the factor known as the vortexial physics of energemata. This also tells you, as does lightning, that lightning travels five or six up to the one, two, or three down. These are the beginnings of our understandings of the formulation of travel, formulation of acceptance or propagation of different energy forms. And you can look at a photon. 0.000137 is the neutral point of either acceptance or propagation. Either way, it's like aloha, hello and goodbye in the same word. And so you have in the black hole, hello and goodbye in the same term, in the same physical application in physics, and yet at the same time, you can also, as I said, very specifically, you have to have the correct parameters of operation and the correct people aboard before you can take a ship and travel through that. Once you do, the other side is awesome. And I'm going to leave it at that because it gets worse as you go along in terms of the explanation.
For a second, we talk for hours.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do.
This particular person has been following this type of information since 1970, and he's 65 years old now. He would like to know, could you be specific about what will happen in the next year or two?
No, because I don't know.
Yeah,
all
I know,
I have some of the things that we've seen as potential events on this timeline. I have the things that I am striving towards. I know some of the things that the enemy wants to produce. I know some of the things that may or may not happen, but I'm not going to lie down at the base of the tree and try to tell you which branch is the right branch, because I don't know.
Can I play Newton?
You play Newton.
Okay, well,
have a hard hat.
No. The apple drops on the head and you discover gravity. Right. There are going to be, and everybody can look forward to these, a few little squirrely surprises. And then there's going to be a couple of big ones. And I'm going to just leave everybody's salted oats right there.
Okay.
That was good news.
Right. During DMT trips and while just meditating naturally, people have encountered entities and have experiences places that are otherworldly. Is this somewhere in a dimension or the astral plane?
It can be a bit of both. Depends on the person. Depends on what's going on. DMT is produced by your pineal. Your pineal is a gland in your brain that is basically your interface with higher dimension and spirit worlds.
Right, okay.
People seem to think that just because you can produce it with a chemical must mean that it is the product of human imagination or the product of a chemical. No, you actually have an organ to help with this. It's your pineal.
Yeah.
And it can work, it can function both extra-dimensionally and in other planes, spirit realms and planes of existence. And ours, due to generations of attempted engineering to try to force it into a small, stunted thing, followed by decades of poison in our food supply and our air and our water, likewise designed to limit the function of it. Ours aren't working as well as they should be, but don't worry, that's not permanent. And you can change it.
There's a Kickstarter coming.
Yep.
When we astral project, could we be in a different form than we are now?
Yep. I would reckon that if you are an incarnate...
In my heart, I look a lot different.
Oh, heck yeah. I look a lot different out there than I do down here. Got a lot
yeah.
more limbs, for one thing.
That's an understatement.
Be quiet. Old luggage.
I like
yeah, you've got two tails now, right?
Yes, I don't know. I don't understand. This is not normal for my species. I don't know if I, like, stepped into something or something, but I grew an extra set of, like, an extra tail and an extra two sets of wings. My species normally has one tail and one pair of wings. I don't know what's going on. What the heck did I step in?
You step into the realm of the royal. Only the royal dragons have those auspices.
All right. There is a renewed interest in the UK TV broadcast takeover, where a voice of Gramaha, the representative of Asta or Ashtar in some texts, Galactic Command, warns of dire consequences. Was this announcement part of your group or groups?
I think I heard about that one. That was the one from the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Saw that one. I don't remember much about the details. It was not Ashtar Command. The Aster Space Command is something different. Again, this was back in the 70s. I think we've stated before that the knowledge of exactly what has been going on this planet evolved over time. At that time, most of the positive groups would still be suffering under the illusion that what was going on this planet was somehow a product of the messed upnesses of Terrans. Nope. We know for a fact that there's been tampering involved. And most of those concerned groups have either come to that conclusion on their own or been informed by those of us who know this with the evidence in hand, saying if you try to cause problems for these Terrans based on what we believed in the 70s, we are going to have an issue with that. Because it ain't their fault.
Right, the next one is, I've broken it down a bit into individual questions. Did the Galactic Commonwealth send this TV broadcast message?
Did the witch? I'm sorry, I had some audio interrupts.
Galactic Commonwealth. Never heard of it.
Can't say I heard of them.
Not heard mention of it, and it doesn't really have the impact or substance that it should in order to be relevant.
Okay. Next question. Is there a Commonwealth of 13 galactic clusters?
Now, I've heard of this. If there is, they have not included some fairly major groups in the Milky Way to the point where I would say that they don't and cannot represent us.
Yeah.
Okay. Did rebel Andromedans align with the Draconians?
Well, that would be that would raise the question of, when you mean Andromedans, are you talking about people from the Andromeda galaxy? People from the Andromeda system?
Constellation?
Yeah, constellation? People from the Andromeda Council? Because, yes, there were people from the Andromeda galaxy who allied with the reptilians. As far as I know, there was no rebel faction among the Andromeda Council who had anything to do with reptilians.
Okay.
But remember, a galaxy is a large place with billions of stars. Even a small galaxy has millions of stars. And Andromeda is no exception. So, yes, there's good guys there, there's bad guys there, there's reppy lovers there, and there's people who want to go to war with them, too.
Okay. Will Earth be invaded by the Draconian Alliance posing as you and later form a one-world government?
Over my dead body.
Yeah, not going to happen. As far as the Draconian Alliance invading the planet,
there
well,
is
guess
one major
what?
Obstacle.
They're already here.
Yeah,
they're
there
already
is one major obstacle to overt invasion, and that is the fact that there are some people around who really, really take exception to that.
Yeah.
If they do that, well, I'll have gone silent long before because I'll have been killed. Because I'm serious. Over my dead body.
Yeah.
And believe me, the Federation and all their allies feel the same way.
I presume
you
this
die
is
over 13 1,600 ruts.
The worst I can see is that forces already present on the planet might fake it for a while. But, again, we'd be working to end that really rapidly.
Okay. Yeah, the Galactic Federation of Planets has over 1,300-plus allies, along with its own people, that intend to stand in the way of the Draconians from any more invasions, you know, any other bad guys that want to try and invade. Not going to happen.
And the
Mini-pants allowed.
Yeah. Is the flagship called Levan or the Moon?
Or the what?
I presume it's the Draconian Alliance. Is it called Levan or Levan? L-E-V-A-N or the Moon?
The Moon? I don't think it's called the Moon, but the Moon is a reptilian ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose what they're asking is, yeah, is the Moon their flagship and such?
No, flagships usually aren't derelict. That thing is a derelict.
Yeah.
Same with Ceres and Phobos.
And Deimos.
Yep, derelicts.
In
several derelicts.
They, people who are interested in Isen might want to take note. The Reptoids are exceedingly fond of hollowing out asteroids to use as ships.
Yeah.
Like
why?
Phobos.
I don't know. Yep.
And
Phobos,
Ceres.
Deimos, Ceres. There's multiple. The thing that knocked Uranus on its side was another one of the reptilian mother ships going by it. It knocked Uranus on its side and then ripped off the atmosphere of Mars and sailed past Earth and almost crashed into Venus, but
like we've been saying, they like throwing rocks.
Mm-hmm. But all they're capable of at this point.
This person's body is vibrating very subtly all the time. It's like the vibration before an out-of-body experience or an astral projection episode, but it doesn't increase in intensity. Can you tell me what this means?
Not having experienced it, that'd be difficult. Maybe it's your own body reacting to all the changes. I don't know. What do you feel it is? Ask yourself first.
Will it be something to do with the Schumann resonance going up, Drake?
Could very well be it. It has been going up. I know I'm not Drake, but speculating here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. In our new 3D world, will we have a specific range of longevity?
The average 3D human lives from about 1,100 to 1,500 years, typically. And yes, that means that if you are currently under 100 years old, you will look forward to 1,000 to 1,400 years. If you are over 100 years old, you will look forward to just under 99.9 years to just under 1,400. If you are middle-aged at the prime of your life, you'll still look forward to a good 1,100 to 1,500 years. You don't lose half your life just because you spent 30 years down here or 60 years down here or 80 years down here. Don't worry about that. You'll get the full range at health.
It has been stated a few times that ascension is inevitable. Nothing can stop it. That being so, then what would the cabal have to gain by reducing the global population by 6.5 billion?
I don't think they truly understand what ascension is.
Yeah.
Or the fact that it's inevitable. Like, there's been a lot of evidence to suggest that they just really don't understand, fundamentally do not understand a lot of this. That said, I can't really understand half of what they do because it just does not connect with any reality that I know.
Any logic.
Yeah, it just does not compute. You know, error does not compute. I do think maybe that they're suffering under the misapprehension that if they do this, they can somehow stop it. It could also be that they're attempting to invoke the negative timeline. And we've spoken about the timeline splitting before. They're going to have it. It's just that the rest of us ain't going to experience it. They can have their dystopian hell. They're welcome to it. Count me out.
Yeah. Me too as well. Did ancient Greece make any progress to lead humanity to the right direction, or were they also controlled by the reptoids?
Ancient Greece was actually fairly deeply involved with, the higher dimensionals that are now known as the Greek gods.
Yeah.
So there was this brief time where they were doing pretty good. It all kind of fell apart around the time of Philip of Macedonia and Alexander the Great. That's when things started to go sideways.
Something people need to understand is that when you force an agenda into the realities, into the timelines, you cause adverse effects generally reflected back to your own agenda. That means that the fun and games that they try to start didn't just go sideways in terms of what we see in history, but eat them up, literally. So, you know, the other part to all this is that these people do not, first of all, accept anything we've promulgated, anything that we've taught or the information provided. They are so absolute that they refuse to accept anything less than the agenda that they have been taught they are to strive towards. So they would continually strive towards these things that are, first of all, not attainable, but secondly, actually will come back and feed on them. But the interesting part is that all of a sudden, and this is sudden, it's like flipping a light switch and the lights come on, they're going to have an extraordinary surprise. And these people are may or may not be able to mentally contain themselves or formulate any form of stability to the extent that they don't jump off buildings, out windows, etc. So this is going to be extraordinarily interesting when this happens.
Extraordinarily interesting. I'm going to call it entertaining.
Yes. That too.
Final question for this evening. Is the info that Andrew Barthes talks about regarding Akashic records and galactic history accurate?
You know, I had never heard of him until the other day when somebody posted something that he apparently said about us. Well, us being the Silver Legion. I was that for independent confirmation, I guess. I don't know. I do know that there are people who are able to look into the true Akashic records and get that kind of information.
Very good. Drake, do you want to finish up?
Well, sure. This has been more fun than putting a cat in a washer. I believe that, and I've noticed that, people are getting more concise and precise in terms of their questioning. This means that they've got a basic knowledge, operational basis to work from, which is great. The thing that I ask, and everybody can do what they want to with it, get involved or whatever, is to ask other people that don't want to have nothing to do with it. If you could ask a question of ET, what would it be? And see what they come up with. I think that would be real entertaining and a lot of fun. Okay?
Right. That's it for this evening. Thank you for all joining us. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on Sunday with Drake and I. My name's Thomas Williams, and good night.
Good night.
Not as we know it, not as we know it, not as we know it. It's life, Jim, but not as we know it, not as we know it, Captain.